real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. German opposition leader Friedrich Merz's conservatives are on track for a far-right victory in Germany's elections, the strongest showing for a far-right party since World War II. Chancellor Olaf Scholz conceded defeat for his center-left Social Democrats. On a social media site, President Trump calling it, quote, a great day for Germany. Ukrainian President Zelensky today saying he would step down if his country were offered NATO membership. Zelensky's remarks come after President Trump accused him of being a dictator without elections and presented him as an obstacle to ending the war in Ukraine. On ABC's This Week, Republican Congressman Representative Mike Lawler saying the blame lies with Russia's leader.
Vladimir Putin is a vile dictator and thug, and he is clearly responsible for the war in Ukraine.
Pope Francis remaining hospitalized, 10th day now in Rome. The Vatican said today that blood tests show the Pope is in early kidney failure. This is ABC News. Purchases of existing homes dropped last month. That's word from the National Association of Realtors.
Existing home sales decreased almost 5% in January. The average previously owned home for sale in the last month spent 41 days on the market. That's the longest period since January of 2020. Inventory is another issue. There's not a lot out there. Plus, mortgage rates remain closer to 7 than 6% and haven't changed much over the last few months. That puts home prices at an all-time high for January.
ABC's Phil Lipoff. There was an emergency landing at LAX. It was a Delta Airlines flight. More than 160 passengers on board leaving from Los Angeles. They were going to Sydney, had to turn around 30 minutes into the trip after some smoke detected in the galley. The airline saying nobody was hurt and passengers rebooked on other flights. Captain America, Brave New World finished at number one at the box office for its second weekend, but with a steep 68% drop in ticket sales from last week. Dave Packer, ABC News.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Dane County Humane Society is your local, independent, donor-supported animal shelter. Your contributions provide care and new beginnings to thousands of animals every year. Join Dane County Humane Society on March 14th at Monona Terrace for Toto's Gala. Get ready for an unforgettable evening filled with snuggly animal greeters, cocktails, dinner, dancing, all the while raising funds to support animals at the Dane County Humane Society and in our community. Reserve your spot at giveshelter.org/Toto.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. Some Wisconsin tribal nations are using renewable energy to reassert supremacy over their communities while creating opportunity. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
Tribal nations have historically faced challenges to own and control their own electricity, even though a significant number of plant and utility infrastructure are in close proximity to reservation lands. Isaiah Ness founded Sunbear Industries after witnessing disproportionate opportunities in the renewable energy space.
There's not much disparity in the type of person that was receiving solar. It was one of those things that you could see the common trend very easily.
Ness now helps indigenous and minority communities in Wisconsin to build renewable energy infrastructure with an emphasis on intersecting cultural appreciation and economic opportunities. The Menominee Nation is working to achieve energy sovereignty by 2035. Part of that vision began with their Solar Elder Project, which was created to ensure elder community members are never without power during outages.
It makes more sense for them to have on-reservation power-producing plants and facilities that are also sourced from clean energy, and then for them to be able to reinvest into their own community.
Community partnerships and grants have been a crucial component to the progress Indigenous communities have made thus far. Uncertainty looms on whether programs like these will be included in proposed spending cuts under the Trump administration. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org. This story was produced with original reporting from Robert Chappell for Madison 365.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Tonight, mostly cloudy, lows around 32. Partly sunny, upper 40s to near 50 on Monday. For Monday night, mostly cloudy and a low around 29, some light rain possible. Tuesday, mostly sunny, a high of 47. Wednesday, rain and mid-40s.
Right now, it's 37.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome RogerEbert.com film critic Mariah Gates for some Oscar talk, and entrepreneur Chad Franker joins the show to talk about a new program to combat loneliness.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
A new choice. Madison's real news and great conversation. 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Starting out this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we'll hear a segment from the Earl Ingram Show. Earl was joined by Professor Bob Harvey for a history lesson, educating listeners on the slave trade and religious freedom, touching the hearts of callers and texters.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842, the one and only Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from sunny South Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina, is on the line. And you know, Professor Harvey, I would have loved to have been in your class. You know, I think one of the things that people need to understand is you taught a lot of white students as well. Is it safe to say that?
Oh, yeah, all types of students. I mean, in lacrosse, it was amazing because I left North Carolina Central in 1978, and I was invited to come up as a visiting lecturer at UW Lacrosse, teaching the Minority Studies Institute. And in North Carolina Central, I went from teaching 99% black students in my classrooms to teaching, if you want to lacrosse, and teaching 99% white students. And in both cases, the classrooms were packed. You know, because the thing is, history has to be taught in such a way that it's relevant to the past, but it also has to be relevant to the present. History has to live in the minds of the students, and they have to see themselves in the history book. It's not just enough to talk about the history events and individuals in the past, because once you look at a book, it's already the past. That's why it's a book.
Right.
You know, so I always taught my students that history has to come alive and they have to be a part of it. They have to see themselves on that slave ship. They have to see themselves as colonists that came here for the first time. And they have to also learn that many of the original ancestors that came from Europe to the New World were fleeing and running away from something. Many of the religious folk had to flee their country because, especially if they were Protestant, because a lot of the, except for England, a lot of Western Europe was under the domination of the Catholic Church. And if you were not a Catholic, then you were listed as a heretic. So many of those individuals that were influenced by people like John Calvin and Martin Luther and others had to flee to come to the New World to have religious freedom. That's why religious freedom is one of the first items built into the first amendment to the Constitution, freedom of religion. It came from that concept that these people were listed as heretics and everything else, and they had to flee Europe to come into for a new world. And they got here, and they found a Native American population where they couldn't bother them too much, But they also realized that if they brought slaves, then they could have them to work for nothing or to work for at least for their freedom. And that's where the indentured servitude came in.
So,
A lot of the Europeans came over as indentured servants.
So, Professor Howard, we've got a text message, and then we're going to go to the phone lines. Catholic Church, this is Courtney Mark, Catholic Church has a long history of opposing slavery, with condemnations dating back centuries before the modern abolition movement. Anti-Catholic bigots have tried this canard for centuries.
But the Catholic Church, both the Portuguese and the Spanish were dominated by the Catholic Church. And it was Pope Alexander VI and others who pretty much went ahead and sanctioned the institution of slavery. Remember, many of those Spanish exploring ships that came over to settle in the New World came with an army. Those were the conquistadors. And they came with popes, with religious individuals, whose main job it was to convert the so-called heathens. They figured that these people were heathens. They were not Christians. They had to be converted. That's why you find all those churches being built in these missions. And they got over here and realized that not only were the people dying off because of forced labor, but they were dying off because they were exposed to European diseases that just wiped them out. Remember in the 14th and the 13th, 14th, and 15th centuries, Europe, from the Mediterranean region all the way up, to the lands of Denmark, Belgium, and also the Dutch, they were heavily impacted. Of course, England as well as an island, they were heavily inundated with plague. The Black Plague wiped out almost a third of the European population during that time in the 13th, 14th, and 15th centuries. So though those people had adjusted to it biologically, by the time they got to the New World, they were bringing a lot of diseases with them,
so,
also measles and other diseases.
So, Professor Harvey, I'm sorry, go ahead.
They largely decimated the Native American population. Think about it biologically. These people were surrounded by two major oceans, the Atlantic and the Pacific. There were people who lived in these regions, and they didn't have a lot of the diseases that they had in Europe, and for that matter, in Africa, because the Africans also brought some diseases over here.
So, Professor Harvey, we got a lot of phone calls, people who want to have a conversation with you. Can we take a few calls?
Yes, go ahead.
All right, let's go to Vincent. Good morning to you, Vincent. How you doing, sir?
Doing well, Earl. Doing well, Earl.
Hey, man, it's good to hear your voice, man. Been a while.
You got to stop changing your phone number, man.
No, man. Hey, man, we've been here a while. But you've heard the great Professor Harvey in the past?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have for years. And he is a treasure to our community. The fact is, I was going to say that even after Black History Month, he needs to be a staple on.
Yeah,
your show.
I will bring him back. I will definitely bring Professor Harvey back. No question. Go ahead.
Because the fact is that with this new administration, African American history is under assault. The fact is, when you talk about Google talking about they're not going to celebrate African American history and other platforms like that, the fact is that companies are slowly. Slowly but surely, getting rid of DEI programs and programs that really helped African Americans in this country, and the history being torn apart as far as black folks in this country. He's a treasure at this point.
Yeah,
in time.
He is.
So my point is to Professor Harvey, how important is it for us to fight back not only for Black History Month, but throughout the year to try to keep this history going? Because the fact is, it's definitely under assault. That's my question.
Hey, Vincent, thank you very much for the call, man. And call a little more. You got to listen in order, more. But thank you. Professor Harvey? Professor Harvey?
Yeah. Well, look, Earl, important. Keep in mind one thing, Laverne and I, we've been monitoring, a lot of the situations that have come out. Now, she stayed more actively involved with it than I do these days. But remember one thing, Earl, African-American history is not going anywhere. They can do all of the destruction of woke programs and DEI programs all they want. It is not going anywhere. The history is there. And not only that, but there are many students. The most exciting students that I taught were white students. They were learning this issue for the first time. So, you know, the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. And there are enough decent people out there who are going to want to know the true history. I don't knock, you know, the programs like the special program right now that's dealing with the 1619 project. I think it's a laudable project. But when you go back and start digging into history, you find out that long before the Mayflower, Lerone Bennett got it right, long before the Mayflower, blacks were already here.
Right.
And if you study that carefully, it's going to take you back even further, because then you start getting into Egyptology. I saw an interesting program the other night on television, and they were talking about the early man. And this one scholar, one white scholar from South Africa, was saying that the original Egyptians were descendants of the Nubian people that were in the southern and the northern part of the Sudan, and living parts of some of them were living in the southern parts of Egypt. The ones you see on television right now talking about the pyramids, they're not the original Egyptians. The ones who built the pyramids. And he said one of the giveaways was studying the mummy and finding the high concentration and content of melanin. Melanin, the more melanin you have in your body, the darker your skin color is. So he said that in itself was a giveaway. And even that form of history has been robbed, because Egypt, in all my years of studying history, Egypt is the only civilization that you know of consistently where their history has been robbed, and they try to take Egypt out of Africa because they don't want you to know that the most storied civilization in world history is an African civilization. It's Egypt. And some scholars, some black scholars have said that Egypt is the daughter of Ethiopia. And if you talk to a lot of Ethiopians and friends that I've had that are Ethiopians, they will tell you the magnificent history that influence that Ethiopia had over ancient.
So Professor Harvey,
I mean, there's some fascinating stories there.
So Professor Harvey, I'm going to take Vincent up on what he said and certainly bring you back many more times as we used to. Let's go to Tom from L.A. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Good morning. I agree with Vincent. The words that come to my mind are American treasure. And that's what Dr. Harvey is, Professor Harvey is, every time he's on your show. What I'd like to do also is recommend to Civic Media to actually have it where Professor Harvey teaches a class on civic media on the weekend or something about this stuff.
That's not a bad idea, Tom. You know, we can talk to Professor Harvey, and you know, Professor Harvey, as you stated and as Vincent stated, is a treasure, and Professor Harvey's recall in history is he doesn't even have to give it a thought. It's in his spirit. It's in the essence of who he is. And he is exactly it. It's a great idea, Tom. We'll certainly explore it. Guys, hang on the phone lines. Professor Harvey, man, you know, I deserve a beating for it being so long before I got you back on. 855-752-4842. The one and only Professor Bob Harvey has graced the airlines with us once again on the Earl Ingram Show.
The Earl Ingram Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 8 till 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. The Army National Guard has taught me the value of showing respect to those I come in contact with each day. My service also allows me to be there for my community in ways others can't. I help my hometown recover after nature strikes. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country and those I care about safe from threats. I also work with a network of professionals that help me succeed and accomplish the mission. Plus, the Army National Guard education benefits make getting a higher education a reality. Being an Army National Guard soldier makes living and serving in my community more rewarding every day. Learn how you, too, can live and serve part-time, close to home, by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
This is Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Up next on the Civic Media Spotlight, we'll go to Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Pete was joined by Matt Harper, Northeast Wisconsin-based rock and rap musician, to talk about Kendrick Lamar's Super Bowl halftime show and to perform some songs of his own in the studio. To learn more about these shows and all of the programming across the Civic Media Network, head over to civicmedia.us/shows to see the entire broadcast lineup. Check us out on social media, too, on Facebook, Blue Sky, YouTube, X, and Instagram to keep up with Civic Media.
Gilda Radner and Rosanna Dana is sweeping our question of the night answers, the front runner in our question of the night, which is, what is your favorite SNL sketch or character from over the years? We've probably got five or six texts that have said Rosanna Dana, but there are no right or wrong answers, folks. There are only your answers. So be part of the fun and let us know. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. Right now, we are about to make, well, I thought we were making radio history, but apparently we're not. Apparently, even on Civic Media, there have been two Matts on a show before, and it was all tongue-in-cheek anyway. But our second Matt of the night joins us here in the studio. He's a rap rock artist from right here in Northeast Wisconsin. Matt Harper is back on the show. Hey, buddy.
Hey, how's it going, man? Thanks for having me back.
Listen, dude, it's great to have you here. And you're very good at social media because sometimes I have guests on the show and I'm like, oh my God, why haven't we had this guy back yet? And it's like all of a sudden I'm like, oh yeah, Matt.
Yeah.
So yeah. I applaud you for having such a great social media presence. And that's why you do it, right?
Right. I mean, it's the biggest part of it now. I mean, even you guys know bad music gets popular all because of the promotion. So
how about that?
I'm saying mine's bad, but.
Right. No, I knew
it all helps
though.
It. The brand is bigger than the music now. So
absolutely. So, all right. I love this. We were talking a little bit about this before you came on the show. I said, and I don't have my finger on the pulse necessarily of all music. I know what I like, but rap rock artist. I don't hear that a lot. Is that a common crossing of genres? If it is even crossing genres?
Yeah. So, you know, back in the late 90s and the early 2000s, you had the new metal wave, which was bands like Linkin Park and Limp Bizkit, Papa Roach, POD, Saliva. A lot of those guys did that sound, and it had a really good run for 5 or 6 years and became some of the most popular, you know, heavy rock music at the time. You've seen that kind of taper off through the 2010s, and now it's made a resurgence a little with bands like Falling in Reverse is a big one, I Prevail. Bands that bring some of that rap, hip-hop, electronic music into the rock and the metal scene. And I just love the fusion of genres. You see a lot of crossover now with the country rap artists like Jelly Roll and even Morgan Wallen to a certain extent. You've even seen some country metal crossover where Jelly Roll's done songs with Ozzy. He's done a song with Falling in Reverse. So I've always been a fan of mixing different genres of music together to make something unique.
I mean, not to get like too deep here, but doesn't that bring people together too? Like when they see their favorite, like I would say maybe, and I'm generalizing, but let's say country fans might be more resistant to seeing their favorite artist doing rap or vice versa. But doesn't that help people come together?
I think it really does. And it's been cool with music festivals. Like you look at the Harley Davidson thing last year and you had Friday night was Jelly Roll. And then Saturday night was Red Hot Chili Peppers and Offspring.
Yeah.
And you're seeing the same people, you know, and even MGK came out with Jelly Roll in his set. And I love the crossing of all of it. And I think it has brought some of it together. And the way music is now, I mean, everybody has any song at their disposal, at their fingertips with streaming platforms. So you see playlists and stuff that people curate has been such a popular thing in music, and they're all over the board. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to get on some pretty decent sized playlists before. And, you know, I'm there with everything from old school 80s hip hop to classic rock to, you know, modern metal music. And it's really neat to just see all that stuff come together.
That's so cool. Can I just tell you, one of the things I love about your, I don't know if I'd say your brand or how you present yourself, is that there's plenty of white hip hop people now, right. And now there's black country artists, and I love all that stuff. But even a lot of the white hip hop guys look like Eminem, or they, you know, you look like you maybe just got off a tractor. You got these awesome boots on, you got the beard, and then you start pumping out these raps. And I just think it's so cool, because the first time I met you, I was not expecting that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just, you got to keep it real, right? There's a hip-hop term for you. And, you know, I'm a blue-collar construction guy. I was on a job site today before I came here. So,
it's so great.
You know, I wear the Carhartt because I actually work in the trade, not just because it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, like, even with my brand, I try to keep some of that blue-collar, which has really hasn't been a song topic in a lot of metal songs, and I brought that in one I'll play later tonight. And the motorcycle culture and all of that kind of stuff is what I know. So that's what I want to talk about in my music. It's like any of the rappers do the same thing with, you know, their backgrounds and the subject matter that they sing and rap about. And I do the same with mine.
Yeah. Before we get into, you have a new album out. People can stream. We'll get into that. You're going to perform for us. I want to ask you before we get up against the news here, the Super Bowl halftime show.
Oh, it's killer.
Yeah. I have to admit, I watched it, Matt, and I was like, this is pretty cool. I thought it was a great presentation. I thought the colors and the dancing was cool. And mm-hmm. I could tell there was some protest in there. I heard 40 Acres and a Mule.
Yep.
But that's not my first favorite music, so I don't know Kendrick. I know about the feud between he and Drake, and my son is like, Dad, that was the greatest thing I've ever seen. I was like, it was? Okay. And that made me look into it more, and now yep. I love it.
Yep.
What were your thoughts?
I've actually went back and probably watched it 5 times now, because I didn't even catch all of it as I was watching it. And just when you peel back all the layers of that performance, you know, the Drake thing aside was incredible, but he brings out Samuel L. Jackson as Uncle Sam and does the, you know, you can't sing that song, it's too ghetto, it's not mainstream, right. It's, you know, all of that. And then he ties it back into towards the end of his performance, where he does the Turn the TV Off song of his, which is a great song, but he did that to kind of troll all the people he knew were going to comment on social media and say, this is the worst halftime show I've ever seen, you know, and he had that platform to where he could say, look, I'm on the biggest stage of the world. If you don't like it, turn your TV off.
Doesn't matter what you think.
Doesn't matter what you think. And getting back to the Drake thing, I mean, rap battles is such an integral part of rap music and hip hop, and has been forever. And some of the greatest songs have been diss songs, and he's the first one ever win a Grammy on a diss song, which is
like,
it's unheard of. And the awards and all the recognition that he's gotten recently, and, you know, really capped it off with the halftime performance. And I liked how he had really good production, but he kept it stripped down. He kind of kept it old school hip hop.
Yeah.
I mean, he buried Drake. There's no question. I mean, Drake came out with a new song the next day, and it was called something like Forget the Rap Beef, I Just Want to Party, because he's admitting.
Because he knows.
I mean, even the lighting in the crowd, they had, you know, people must have had lights on them that spelled out game over when he was done.
Yeah.
And it is. I mean, there's no coming back from this. There's no bigger stage that Drake could come back against Kendrick than the Super Bowl halftime show.
He could probably just say, you know what, I'm doing okay. I don't need to keep going after this guy.
He's fine.
Matt Harper is here. When we come back, he's going to perform something off his new album, and we're going to talk more about all cool things music with our buddy Matt Harper. It's Nightlight with Peach Wabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Peach Wabba is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
A voice for Madison. Real news and great conversation. 92.7 WMDX.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. German opposition leader Friedrich Merz's conservatives are on track for a far-right victory in Germany's elections, the strongest showing for a far-right party since World War II. Chancellor Olaf Scholz conceded defeat for his center-left Social Democrats. On a social media site, President Trump calling it, quote, a great day for Germany. Ukrainian President Zelensky today saying he would step down if his country were offered NATO membership. Zelensky's remarks come after President Trump accused him of being a dictator without elections and presented him as an obstacle to ending the war in Ukraine. On ABC's This Week, Republican Congressman Representative Mike Lawler saying the blame lies with Russia's leader.
Vladimir Putin is a vile dictator and thug, and he is clearly responsible for the war in Ukraine.
Pope Francis remaining hospitalized, 10th day now in Rome. The Vatican said today that blood tests show the Pope is in early kidney failure. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Badgers lose in overtime. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, the number 11th ranked Wisconsin Badgers losing to Oregon 77-73. It ended a five-game winning streak for the Badgers, who host the Washington Huskies on Tuesday. Head coach Greg Gard.
That's credit to Oregon. We didn't attack the pressure. We got us to walk the ball up and play slower. So we'll learn from this and quickly turn the page for Tuesday night. But again, what got us in trouble was the completely kind of taking our foot off the gas offensively for whatever reason.
Baseball, in the first day of Cactus League action, the Brewers beat the Reds 8-7 thanks to a pair of home runs by infielder Vinny Capra.
I was just focused on the process. You know, I didn't have the greatest BP, and I just said I'm just going to go on to the game and try and do what I can and just focus on the ball, focus on the pitcher, and focus on approach, and just got to do what I can, and it ended up being a good day.
That's the Brewers' Vinny Capra. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Tonight, mostly cloudy, lows around 32. Partly sunny, upper 40s to near 50 on Monday. For Monday night, mostly cloudy and a low around 29, some light rain possible. Tuesday, mostly sunny, a high of 47. Wednesday, rain and mid-40s.
Right now, it's 37.
You know Ignite Glass and Gifts' three locations in Madison, but you can also shop igniteglassandgifts.com. You'll find grinders, lighters, collectibles, hand-blown glass water pipes, artistically designed jewelry, and plenty of other items delivered straight to your door or to family and friends. Madison's favorite for glass, gifts, and vape, Ignite Glass and Gifts, Monona Drive, Williamson Street, and Odana Road, plus igniteglassandgifts.com.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Mississippi has one of the country's worst records for protecting voting rights and advancing democracy reforms. So when pro-voter bills emerge from the state House and Senate, like in-person early voting and the ability to cure a mismatched absentee signature, democracy advocates take notice. Mississippi is one of only three states without some form of in-person early voting, along with Alabama and New Hampshire. The Mississippi Free Press reports that February 12th, the Mississippi Senate passed SB 2654, allowing 15 days of early voting, ending the Saturday before the election at noon. The Republican-sponsored bill passed 39-12, but even if the House advances, it may still be vetoed by Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves, who accused the bill's sponsor of making the state's elections less secure. The Mississippi House also took some positive steps. HB 1419 prohibits moving or closing a polling place location within 60 days of an election, sometimes used as a voter suppression tactic. HB 163 sets rules for absentee ballots where the signature on file doesn't match the signed outer ballot envelope and would give the voter a chance to cure the problem. And HB 288 would make each county's five election commissioners nonpartisan positions. All three bills now move to the Senate. We have more on these bills and local reporting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time as we'll look back at the weekend headlines with our friend and contributor Matt Flynn, an attorney and two-time chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Don't miss it.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We return you now to the Civic Media Spotlight. And up next, we'll hear from Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Pat was joined this week by State Senator Dora Drake and Representative Sequana Taylor, as a little bit of Black History Month history was made. For 7 years, Republicans have obstructed a clean Black History Month resolution from the Legislative Black Caucus. This year, it passed the Assembly on a unanimous voice vote. Pat also asks the lawmakers about the ongoing fights to take real action on areas where communities of color still face broad disparities.
All right, here's a little extended version of today's history lesson. We mentioned at 6:50 that Pee Wee King, the Wisconsin native who co-wrote Tennessee Waltz, was born on this day. He was also the co-writer of a song called You Belong to Me, which was made famous by singer Joe Stafford back in 1952. But Pee Wee King is also credited with bringing the Musicians Union to the Grand Ole Opry. He was one of the first musicians in Nashville to carry a union card and to have his members in his band work in a union. So we salute Pee Wee King, who was born this day in 1914 in Abrams, Wisconsin. He was born Julius Kaczynski, and he passed away in 2000 at the age of 86. So a little extra history as we bring in Hans Breitmoser as well. To note, there's one other history note I didn't have time to get. It was on this day in 1930 that a cow named Elm Farm Ollie became the first cow to fly in an airplane and the first cow to be milked in an airplane as part of an aircraft exposition in St. Louis. And so she was rather famous for a time starting this day in 1930. I am sure, Hans, you were very well aware of that, knowing your dairy farm history the way that you do.
No. I'm glad you enlightened me. I didn't. That's fascinating.
Yeah. You never know what you're going to find when you're looking up these history things. So there we go. A couple of notes here. Do you have a little thermometer outside the milk house there outside of Merrill?
It is colder than Elon Musk's heart this morning.
Oh, there we go. Enough. Yes, it is. It is so bad out there. But it does. It's one of those days again, and we're getting, I think, fewer and fewer people that can say this, that can say, well, there was that time when it was too cold for the machinery to run, and you're milking by hand, you know, in weather this cold. You're not seeing nearly as much of that as you used to.
Well, yeah, there's a few too many cows to try and milk them all by hand, but it definitely creates problems. We've got problems with, you know, manure systems, and ironically, milk cooling is an issue when it gets this cold. But we got everything running here again this morning, so we're gonna muscle through for another 24 hours or so, and then it looks like it's gonna get a little bit better.
Yeah, here's hoping. Although it is not gonna get better in other ways for farmers who are now learning just what it means when Donald Trump and MAGA Republicans say, you know, we're gonna cut waste. The waste they're talking about would be Wisconsin dairy farmers. We've got a video report up on our site from Selena Heller, who talked to Aaron Pape, who is a farmer in Peshtigo, and says he's looking at a $30,000 loss after Trump reneged on contracts signed by farmers across the country. These are conservation contracts, Selena writes, between the USDA and farms that committed to practices that preserve the future of the environment. They are now on hold. Meanwhile, the money has already been spent, leaving many family farms in limbo. Pape says they're just trying to do good things while taking care of the environment. And it's how I introduced things earlier in the show, Hans, by saying it's very easy to criticize federal spending when you don't know exactly the good that spending does. And I thought that'd be how I kick it off with you in terms of, you know, yes, it's easy to make fun of something like, oh, the government's paying farmers not to farm on their land. Well, Hans, that's for a real good reason.
Well, absolutely, Pat. And you know, you alluded to it earlier. You've got a couple of billionaires making all these decisions on things that they simply know nothing about. And the idea that this money is just being handed out willy-nilly with no thought, I mean, there's a process that goes into it. And there should be a process if we decide that as a society, we no longer want the benefits that come with these cost share agreements, then that's fine. but we need to get there in a you know, by means of good old fashioned democracy and not just the whims of a couple of billionaires who simply don't have a clue about how these programs work. And I think the other important thing that people need to understand is that not only this puts, you know, those farmers in a bad spot financially and otherwise, but think of the lenders, you know, because typically how these programs work is if you get cost sharing for, let's say, you know, some conservation practice or something that costs some money, then typically how that works is you go and spend money first and you get reimbursed for those funds. So you may go to a commercial bank. The commercial bank understands that you're good for the loan because you're getting backed up by these dollars and everybody's happy and everybody's made whole at the end of the day. Think of how many bankers are out there right now scrambling. And also lenders looking at new loans with a great big question mark going, I don't know. I don't think we want to take that kind of risk. So now these things get halted before they can even begin. And it puts just a lot of pressure on these banks that are serving rural America as well. And the loan officers that are doing the work out there, because they don't know what's, you know, going to happen tomorrow. It's the unpredictability of it that makes their lives miserable as well.
So what you're telling me is this is literally undermining that line about how our banking system is backed by, quote, the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. That if you can't have faith in the credit of the U.S. government, that when they make a commitment, when they sign a contract to carry through with it, and some rich guys can come in and willy-nilly rip those contracts up, I mean, that hurts more than just this one family farmer in Peshtigo. It hurts, frankly, the entire banking system.
Absolutely, it hurts the entire banking system. It hurts ag writ large. It hurts rural areas. It hurts so many things because, and again, you know, you just connect these dots. You follow that back and say, here's the reason why we had the system that we had, so that it is stable, so that it is reliable, so that people who are any way involved in that system have an understanding of how things are going to play out. Because historically it hasn't been just the whims of a couple rich guys who are so beyond clueless about how things work in rural America. I'm going to go sideways here, Pat, if you'll indulge me a little bit.
Sure.
And because I feel like all these things are connected. So last night I was at a 4-H Leaders Association meeting, and you know, we're doing the usual things. There's young people, there's adults in the room. We're talking about spring trips and all the things that 4-H offers and so forth. It's a bunch of parents and some young people involved in the governance of our local 4-H, and so we're going through the thing, and at one point it. You know, politics always kind of jumps into my little brain. And I sat there looking at all these good people thinking about how to make their community better and how to make the lives of their children better, and counting paper clips because the budget is you know, as little as can be. And, you know, wondering where this money's going to come from and how can we make that program better and so forth. And it occurred to me that right now, the people who are running the country have never, ever once sat in a meeting like that. They have no clue. Now, I know that's a little bit different than the topic that we're talking about. But my point here is that if you've got a couple billionaires who are allowed to do everything with no checks and balances, what kind of public policy do you think you're going to get when you have people that are so far removed from our reality?
Well, and look at how they're removed from the reality of the people around the world who are in dire need of food and medicine that we're able to supply, and the good that we do for global stability as a result. We've been hearing all about the halting of the USAID offices, the Aid for International Development, and that includes a whole lot of food purchases that would help, you know, hungry people around the planet. But that also means now that a whole lot of dried red kidney beans, a whole bunch of dried cranberries, a whole bunch of dehydrated potatoes, all of these things grown in Wisconsin are not going to be purchased. And so you literally are going to have already harvested crops and food products rotting, not to mention the financial insecurity of whether to plant these things or not this year.
Yeah, it affects everything. It affects the production. It affects the consumption. It affects the transportation. It affects the financing. It literally affects everything. And that's why we've had the system that we've had all these years of checks and balances and of reasonable thought processes that go into things, rather than just saying, yeah, these two guys are pretty smart, let's just let them make all sorts of decisions left and right that impact so many people in so many ways. I mean, we're talking about real human lives here. I think there's, you know, there's something to it's concerning for me as a rural person and as a farmer that these programs are going to have negative impacts on people. But, you know, you start talking about that USAID, we're talking about life or death for a lot of people.
Yeah, we truly are. And then one last area I'd cover as well when it comes to uncertainty is crop insurance and disaster relief. When you look at how from Trump on down, the way that they have politicized disaster relief for the California wildfires. Now, imagine that in two different states, crops are damaged either by flooding or by drought, and that one state, their farmers would get aid, and another one, the state wouldn't, based on the partisan whims of a president or a Congress. And you can see where this is simply a recipe for madness and why it sounds to me like it's just going to drive more farmers off the farm.
Oh, absolutely. It's not going to be good for family farms. But again, I don't think that these folks care. I mean, again, you're talking multi-billionaire Elon Musk. Do you really think he's concerned about who owns the farmland? I mean, he's absolutely positioned to gobble up as much of it as he wants, you know, if he decides that that's a good investment. So, yeah, this is not how democracy is supposed to work.
No.
And clearly it doesn't work well. I mean, that's the point here, right? It doesn't work well if the measure by which things are working or not is doing the most good for the most people most of the time, then I think, we've got it in reverse here right now.
This is a very awkward transition to make because now we're talking about the next generation of farmers and people working in ancillary fields, but this is National FFA Week. And we have no choice in this instance but to try to be a little bit optimistic here and to say that once we get through whatever this ordeal is, we're still going to have people, young people, who choose to go into farming and agriculture overall. So talk to me a bit about the value of FFA in Wisconsin.
Oh, my gosh. I think the value of FFA in Wisconsin and across the nation is huge. I was in FFA when I was a kid, talking about leadership skills and so forth. It ranks right up there. I mean, 4-H and FFA, the impact that they have on our rural areas is really tough to match. And without it, you don't know. It's uncertain again what the future is going to be. So absolutely, you know, FFA has done so much, and I think a lot of people don't understand either that FFA is cranking out all sorts of kids going into all sorts of positions. But one of the things that I think is important that FFA really trains young people about is civics and how democracy works. I mean, just Robert's rules and having a meeting and why it's important to, why the democratic process is important. And by God, we need to teach our kids that now more than ever.
Oh boy, do we ever. And also, now let's talk about ag education. You know, they're the couple of hundred ag educators throughout the state. For folks that think, oh, farming, you know, it's just your parents tell you what to do and you just do it. No, it's always farm education itself is always evolving to make things more efficient, but also to make things safer on the farm as well. So, I mean, there's just so much good that is done by what was known as Future Farmers of America and ag education. And again, we've got the governor's budget address tonight where we will hear what his plans are for the rest of rural Wisconsin. And then we'll talk in a couple of weeks about what the governor proposed and what else is happening between now and then. But Hans, thanks for filling us in on, you know, the misadventures of Musk, at least to this point, for rural Wisconsin. Chin up as best we can, and we'll talk in a couple of weeks here.
Sounds good. Thanks, Pat.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you very much, Hans, for all you do for us. It is coming up on 7:49, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Chad Holmes from 98.9 WXCL Radio, where already, from Roger and Stevens Point, there is a Facebook question for Chad about sports. So we'll be hitting him up with that and finding out what else he's talking about on his show, which follows this one, again, on WXCL in Wausau, or you can listen through the Civic Media app. Head to civicmedia.us. to learn more. This is Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
A new choice. Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Wisconsin's next major election is already here. The race for state Supreme Court is ramping up with just a few weeks to go before the April 1st general election. Much like the race 2 years ago, this will determine the balance of power on the court. If Susan Crawford wins, the court remains in liberal control. If Brad Schimmel wins, the court flips back to a right-wing majority. But there are a number of differing dynamics from the race in 2023. That race, won by Janet Protasiewicz, was the culmination of a years-long effort for liberals to win control of the court. Now they're playing defense to keep that majority. This also begins a run of 6 years in a row with a race for Wisconsin Supreme Court on the spring election ballot. Because of which justices will be up in coming years, if Crawford wins this year, the court will likely remain in liberal control until at least 2028. Find more bigger picture analysis of the race in my latest column at the Recombobulation Area.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Closing out hour one of this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we'll hear from the Dom Salvia Show. Dom was joined by attorney and host of Amicus, a law review, Jim Santel. Each share something good, from happy news on our text line to the good acts we all can do to the power of art.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, our last segment of the day. If you got something to say and something good to share, 855-752-4842. Tell us something good, 855-75-CIVIC. Jess, let's start with you, since this was your bright idea.
Why do you make it sound like it was such a bad idea?
It's a great idea. I love this. It's
spectacular.
It is a great idea. It just makes me work hard. I got to come up with something good. I'm such a negative Nancy all the time. Mm-hmm. So
it's
Jess,
good exercise for you.
Yeah, tell me what's good for me.
Uh-huh. It's part of my job.
I'll tell you what's good for me.
Something good.
Yes.
This isn't necessarily bright and cheerful and happy, but this is just good.
Okay.
I've been rewatching The West Wing. And last night I got to the season 2 finale, which, if anyone who is familiar with this show, the season finales of this they're always very big, very dramatic, and this There's a very dramatic death that occurs and a reckoning with it. And the acting of it, the production of it is just incredibly done. It is so deeply artistic and so emotional that you cannot help feeling things and processing through some things that you're feeling while watching it. So I watched it last night. I had a really good cry from it. It was very cathartic.
So, you know, I always kind of bust your chops because I reference things that you haven't seen yet. Right. I have not watched West Wing, so you recommend.
Absolutely. Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Big fan of Aaron Sorkin, who's the author of that and NBC producing that. And it also, if I can just follow up on Jess's good thought there, and to make this not darker, but the importance of the arts, right, in conveying those kinds of things. We've got creative people in this nation who can change the ways in which we think and move ourselves to not only emotions, but also good intellectual things. And my president is now the head of the chairman of the board or in charge of the Kennedy Center, where they're canceling performances right now.
Yeah, they got rid of those gay dancers.
Exactly.
Yeah, can't have that. Yeah.
And so we can't have the arts anymore. No. And again, it's the juxtaposition of those two amazing things. West Wing, Aaron Sorkin, Jeb Bartlett, our fictitious president for all those years, right?
Oh,
and
man.
Now we have a real president who is just the polar opposite, right?
All right, Jim, you got something good?
I do. We talked a lot today along with your callers, Jean, Margaret, Paul, Mark, everybody, Tom, about all of these federal workers and contractors who are losing their jobs. So if you happen to be in the Washington, D.C. area and you're suddenly finding yourself on the receiving end of a pink slip, you should know that there are all sorts of corporations and companies there who are paying it forward. So, for example, there's a flower shop in Alexandria that's offering free bouquets for any recently laid off federal employees and contractors. You go forward, you identify the date of your furlough and what happened to you.
Nice.
A place called the Right Proper Brewing Company. If you want to buy a federal worker a beer, Jess, the Shaw Brew Pub has a pay-it-forward program allowing customers to do just that. You buy a beer for $8 through an online program called Executive Order Me a Beer. Okay?
Nice.
Right, right. You've got the D.C.-based choir, the 13th choir, is offering two free tickets for its upcoming performance of To the Field of Stars for any federal workers who've been laid off recently. Lyman's Tavern, once again, hosting a happy hour on fundraiser for federal workers alongside the Federal Unionist Network on February 21st. That's tomorrow.
That's
all kinds
tomorrow.
Of good things,
yeah,
on behalf of federal employees finding themselves out of a job inappropriately, illegally today in our nation's capital.
Well
done.
All right, Jim Santel.
James Santel, lighten it up. Appreciate that. Tell us something good. Well, Mary, she texted in, I am a new grandma. Amelia Joan was born yesterday. Aww.
Congratulations, Mary.
Yeah, congratulations. That's fantastic. Hope mommy and the baby doing well. Tom from Madison, he's got something good. You know how to play the game. 855-752-4842. Tom, welcome. What do you got?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I'm working with a group called Fermat's Last Theater Company, and they are doing a play that I'm performing at Muso Madison, the new music space on Winnebago, called Joe Hill, Alive as You and Me. If you want to hear about the labor movement back in 1910, 1915, it's Muso Madison, 2040, Winnebago. It's free, though donations are accepted. And we handle all those really, you know, scary terms like anarchy and communism and socialism. And I think you'd really like it.
Tom, you're on stage. What part do you play?
Everything.
Everything.
Basically,
okay.
I do the songs, and I got to tell you, when I first got approached to do this, I didn't know anything about Joe Hill except that Joan Baez sung about him at Woodstock.
And right.
And when you take the deep dive into the IWW and, you know, back in the day when corporations had armies and there were massacres of coal miners and things that, yeah, you know, might be creeping into our national history again today.
Yeah.
Couldn't be a better time to see it.
Right on, Tom. Thank you so much. Appreciate you sharing. Folks, go check it out. It's free, but they do take donations. 855-752-4842. I want to share just a little bit since we're running out of time. Jimmy Pritzker, governor of Illinois, did his state of the state yesterday. A couple of paragraphs I want to share with you right now. There are people in my own party who think that if you just give Donald Trump everything he wants, he'll make an exception and spare you some of the harm. I'll ignore the moral abdication of that position for just a second to say almost none of those people have the experience with this president that I do. I once swallowed my pride to offer him what he values most, public praise on the Sunday news shows, and in return for ventilators and masks in the worst pandemic, we made a deal. Turns out his promises were as broken as the BiPAP machines he sent us instead of the ventilators. He concludes, Pritzker, tyranny requires your fear and your silence and your compliance. Democracy requires your courage. So gather your justice and humanity and do not let the tragic spirit of despair overcome us when our country needs us the most. Folks, this is the Dom Salve Show. Thank you, James Santel, former U.S. Attorney. Check his show out on Saturdays, 9 to 11. Thank you, Jess P.S. Folks, stick around. Peach Wabba, Nightlight, coming up next. Have a great night. We'll see you tomorrow.
The Dom Salvia Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 4 till 6. To learn more about this show and all the Civic Media programming, check out...
This is Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
John Peterson and Gordy Young...
On our next program, well, wait, do we know what we're going to talk about on Monday?
I don't really think so, no. More of the misadventures of Elon?
Now he has a chainsaw.
The John and Gordy Show, weekday mornings 6 till 8.
Welcome to the Lazy Wolf Lounge, Madison's East Side place for friends and family to meet for fun and food. Stop in for great daily lunch specials, soups made from scratch, and jaw-dropping burgers, wraps, and sandwiches. Plus Friday fish fry and homemade pizza cooked in a classic stone hearth pizza oven. The Lazy Wolf Lounge, 1617 North Stoughton Road in Madison. Follow them on Facebook or at LazyWolfLounge.com.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packard. Ignore Elon Musk's ultimatum. That to federal employees at multiple agencies after an email from the Department of Government Efficiency to list weekly accomplishments and that failure to respond equals resignation.
Agencies are saying to their workers, hold off because we need a little more information here to understand what is exactly happening. There are just so many unanswered questions when it comes to this email, as federal workers are already facing a lot of confusion about where things stand with their employment and the federal government.
ABC's Molly Nagel in Washington, the largest federal workers union, calling the email unlawful. Pope Francis remains in a Rome hospital in critical condition after suffering a new respiratory crisis. The Vatican reports that the Pope is experiencing some mild kidney complications, but doctors now say